First, I'm just going to introduce Euclidean spherical and hyperbolic geometries and explain what they're about. Then I'm going to show you how to embed a sphere in Rn. Then, because embedding ADS space in, to get a Lorentzian ADS space, you need to embed a hyperboloid in a Minkowski spacetime with two time directions. So before we get to that, I'm first going to just derive Euclidean ADS spacetime because the construction is simpler. Then we get to Lorentzian ADS, then the Poincaré fact, which is what the spacetime that's due to the DP brain, the D3 brain curve. And then I'm going to, if there's time, I will compare ADS and CFT. So, Euclidean space is what we're all used to, just flat geometry that we learn in school. So, say you had a, one of the postulates of this space is the parallel postulate, which says that if you're given any line, any point off that line, there's exactly one line going through that point that doesn't intersect with the first line. That is, of course, in a plane, if they lie in the same plane. So, and a nice property that we're all used to is that the angles inside a triangle add up to 180 degrees. This is an example of, this is the simplest example of a flat space or a zero curvature space. And then next example I'll introduce is that of a sphere. So the sphere is the space that you get if you say that there are no parallel lines in our space. So if you have a two-sphere, every line on this space will intersect. Because the lines are the great circles on a sphere. And if you had a triangle on this space, then its angles will add up to greater than 180 degrees. This is then the simplest example of a positive curvature. And then,
Anton, when you said lines, what did you really mean?
Lines are the shortest point, the line is the one-dimensional thing that connects two points that is this, that defines the shortest distance between those points. Okay. So in if you were to embed that sphere in Rn, then the shortest distance between the between two points on the sphere would be a great circle on the sphere.
But we could also use the word geodesic then.
Geodesic is a good word.
Okay,
then there's the hyperbolic space where instead of accepting the parallel postulate, you negate the parallel postulate. So if you're given some plane then and a line on that plane, then any point off of that plane will contain, will have at least two lines going through that point that do not intersect with the first line. And again, a line is the geodesic, or the shortest, the one-dimensional thing of short, defining the shortest distance between two points. And if you're given a triangle on this space, then its angles will be, will add up to smaller than 180 degrees. So this is an example of negative curvature. Or hyperbolic geometry. And these examples that I drew are the simplest because they're homogeneous and isotropic, meaning that they look the same at every point on the space. And another reason why it's called hyperbolic is that you can draw the geometry on a hyperbola or on a hyperboloid. So you can draw lines. The lines would be hyperbolas on this three-dimensional surface, or two-dimensional surface, yeah. Okay, and it's also, people talk about saddle-shaped spaces. Well, this is exactly a saddle-shaped space. Okay. Okay. Okay, so next I will show you how to embed a sphere in RN. Okay, so a sphere is just the locus in an n minus 1 sphere. It's just a surface defined by a vector, the square of a vector having a constant value. So, in other words, in Rn it would be x1 squared plus xn squared equal to L squared, where L is the radius of the circle, of the sphere. So, or you can write it just as, okay. well, Rn has the group of symmetries that leaves it invariant, that leave the sphere invariant of SOn. And that's also then the group of rotations of the n minus 1 sphere. So you can easily see that. It's just if you have xi, then, and you transform it under SOn, you've got x I prime. Well, this is just equal to x, the transpose of lambda times lambda, and where this is then the identity. So you get x squared back. So we can see that if the sphere in Rn is invariant under SRn transformations. Okay, and you want to find the induced metric on that sphere. Well, Rn just has a very simple metric of so we choose the metric to be, well, so we want coordinates that cover the sphere, and it's easy to choose those coordinates. We choose them to be keep going on like that, however, until you get to the nth component, which would be so you've effectively you have a n vector that's only made up of n minus one components, and and your surface area of an n sphere is n minus one dimensional, so you know it has the right dimensions. Well, then squaring this, the cos squares would each cos squared would contract with its sine, with the corresponding sine squared of the same angle to give you one, until eventually all of them contract. For example, here you'll have cos squared of theta 2 plus sine squared of theta 2 giving you 1. So eventually you would just have theta squared, omega squared is equal to l squared. So given that, you can write the metric as and so forth, until you get to okay, and so that's your induced metric on the sphere.
Should this thing somehow, the parentheses don't match up?
Yeah, you're right. Let me write that a bit better. And here you'll have cos. So you'll have the theta squared plus yeah, it just, it's a nested thing, right? So the last thing you'll have is that's what it looks like, and we're all used to the two-dimensional and three-dimensional versions of this. For example, oh, and of course there should be an L squared in front because that's the radius of your sphere. The two sphere will have an induced metric of theta 1 squared plus. As an example. Okay. I think I'll go on here.
So nobody else is asking, but maybe because we all know, but what were the steps? You wrote down a flat space metric, you wrote down an omega,
right?
And then suddenly ds squared turned into that. What were you doing?
Okay, so I guess I didn't explain it very well, sorry. What I did is this. Okay, so you want to write a metric that you want coordinates so that it squares to L squared. You want a vector that squares to L squared in general. So you need coordinates, and I just called the vector omega, so that sum over I from 1 to n of omega squared I is equal to 1. Okay.
Would that be L squared?
Yes, actually. Well, I guess the way I defined it, yes. But since I want it to be the solid angle, I think I'll just do that. And then okay, so if you square this, it's equal to 1. And the trigonometric functions happen to obey that property, which is what makes it nice. So is that good enough?
Yes. It might be very stupid question. I generally see a sine square theta in the last thing. In the last metric for two.
Well, I have a cos squared, and
hey, it's just the way you chose the coordinate.
Yeah, it's just in theta. It
doesn't
shift the theta,
right? Yeah, okay.
Would that be in your ds squared? That ds squared there only for the omega, or that's the whole ds squared?
So
it's a big nested parentheses.
Is that only for the omega? So ds squared, what I did is I have x, yeah, so this is x1, this is x2, blah, 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 to xn. So then I substitute this, so you can see that this has a property that it sums to 1 will by multiplied by L, this vector b, say. Then it squares to L squared. And if you now substitute each of these components into this line element, then after simplifying it, you get that this is your induced metric. Okay. Okay, so now I will introduce Euclidean ideas. So ADS space is the locus, ADS space is hyperbolic because it has negative curvature. So we want to construct a negative curvature space. And hyperboloid is such a space. Now we want to embed it in a space that has the same, for which it will be invariant under that space's group. I guess the word is isometry, if I'm not mistaken. So a hyperboloid has the is the locus of this equation. Okay. So
is that x0?
Well, you can call it what you want. I can call it x0 for you.
Just because you have one place.
Oh, this is an I.
Yeah, we're starting at one.
You're right. Thanks. Okay. So this is a hyperboloid that looks like this. This guy isn't invariant under spherical rotation, so we need a different group that leaves it invariant. Such a group would be the group of boosts, or the Lorentz group. And the space that naturally has that structure is R of 1, comma n. So that this, in R 1, comma n, this is just equal to x squared. So it's the surface of constant x, based of constant distance from the origin. Okay. Also, you can see that because it's a negative number, it's a time-like vector. And you can think of it as a sphere with imaginary radius. So whereas the spherical geometry is on a sphere with real radius, you can kind of imagine that hyperbolic geometry is on a sphere with imaginary radius. And this space has a time direction, but the induced metric on this hyperboloid will still be Euclidean. So we'll lose one of the time signatures. Okay, so that's right. You want to find coordinates on that space, and such coordinates would be to write. Oh, that's not there. Okay. So the metric in the Minkowski spacetime is.
Sorry, is that xi? I mean, you mean there's a whole bunch of different i's, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It should be like that, where this is a solid angle. Okay, and so substituting this into our equation, into the metric, you find the induced metric because, again, you're going to lose one of the coordinates. There's one fewer parameters in these equations than there are in the actual Minkowski space. You get the equation, the coordinates on the space. That is that's n dimensional instead of 1, n dimensional. So substituting that in, you get that after simplifications, it is just equal to that's the metric on Euclidean AD.
I think you forgot to write something.
Okay. So that's the metric on Euclidean ADS. Now these coordinates cover the whole space. We're going to ignore the lower half, but this upper shell will be covered by those coordinates. And, this space, as I've said, is hyperbolic, so it has some curious properties. For example, one thing that McGreevy mentions is that if you have a sphere or a ball, now a ball on the ADS space, not in the Minkowski space now, because we're working on in the ADS space now. So if you have a ball on that space, with then it will have a volume. It's integral over the measure of the space, where this is the determinant of this metric. So that I'm working out the volume of a ball on ADS space. Well, this is going to be out to the end. Integral of sine to the n minus 1. So we're integrating from the center of the space to some fixed radius r. Well, if the radius is very big, then what we care about is sine at that close to the boundary, because it's much bigger than it is at its integral will be close to zero. So sine basically looks like the exponential that far out. So you're going to get the integral of e to the n minus 1 times rho. And that's basically is approximately equal to okay. The area of the ball will be now, we have to find the induced metric on the edge of the ball. So this is the metric on ADS space. We want to find the metric on the surface of the ball so that we can calculate its area, its surface area. And that will just be, the induced metric will just be this part of the ADS metric. So we're cutting out the radial part, basically. And then the area will be the square, so the integral over its area times its measure, which is the determinant of the induced metric on the surface of the ball, okay, here now shine cinch of rho is constant because we're working at a constant radius. So I said it's at the radius r, so this would be n minus 1 times r. Then you get L n minus 1. We don't lose a factor of sinh because there's none multiplying the d rho there. So you still get sinh of to the n minus 1 of r times the solid angle. Okay, I did this so that I could show you that for a very large r, sinh to the n minus 1 is approximately equal to the exponential. So if you said, if you find the volume of the ball over the area of the ball at r goes to infinity, then you see that everything will cancel except for one factor of L. So it's just equal to L. It's not exactly equal because I made approximations, of course. So this shows us that in hyperbolic space, the most of the volume is close to the surface of an object. So there's just this corrective factor coming from the metric, but unlike in flat space where this would go to zero, because you'd get, if you divided this, you would get still the factor of the radius. So that it would actually diverge, the volume over the area. But here it goes to a constant, which is curious. About the upper half plane, which is a different set of coordinates on ADS. It's still Euclidean ADS space, though. So okay. This will be very similar to the Poincaré patch that I will get to. That is the usual metric that people see in ADS. Okay, so we still have this holding. But now we're going to choose new coordinates. And I'll choose them as follows.
Why is it plus L squared now?
Thank you for correcting me. Right, so making this change of variables, the new equation for in these new variables, the constraint equation for the surface will be we still have the same number of variables that we used to have. So we want to use this constraint to get rid of one of them and find coordinates that parameterize our ADS space. So what we do is the following. You solve for V, which is going to be equal to and then you plug it into the metric, which in these equation coordinates are du, dv plus dx squared. So substituting in for v into this. And making another change of variables, namely
just a small x.
So that's a little x. I could call it a different thing. Let's call it y. And I should say that this isn't the full thing. This is summing from 1 to n minus 1, because one of the x variables were absorbed into u and v. So So defining this new variable, plugging it all into this metric, it simplifies to so for you who did the homework, this will look very familiar. So this isn't the standard ADS metric. You can get it by making another change of variables, z equals l squared over u, in which case the metric can be written simply as ADS space where z runs from 0 to infinity. It's called the, that's why it's called the, yes?
You should have z equal square over u square.
No, that's right. What's
wrong?
0
is l squared over u.
Do you have a problem with the change in coordinates?
If you
plug in 1 over z here, you're going to get a z squared from here, and the 1 over z to the 4th from this differential, and then it will cancel, and you can end up with the right factors.
That's right.
Would you like me to show that? Or everybody fine with it? Okay. So it's called the upper half plane because z runs from 0 to infinity. And a geodesic in this space are basically either straight lines running perpendicular to the horizontal axis or semicircles like this. And if you're only working in two dimensions, so if y is just one dimensional, then these are all parallel lines in a hyperbolic space. So I should say that z equal to 0 is where the boundary of the space lies. Okay. And so this length from here to here is actually an infinite distance, because the boundary of AGS space lies at infinity. It's just in these coordinates it looks like it's at 0. So that this metric explains why a geodesic would be of this form, because a line, the shortest distance between these two points, would want to stay as far from the boundary as it can. So it would go in a curve away from the boundary, from the one point to the other. Because that would, because the smaller z is, the larger the distance will be. Okay. And then I come to Lorentzian ADS, so I will construct an ADS space-time.
Since it'll come up in a while, if I wander around in z and y coordinates, have we covered that entire sheet?
No.
You haven't?
No. Okay, so under these coordinates here, no, because I think I'll just write it. So just looking at the coordinate U, I made a change of coordinates z equals u over l squared. So that means that minus x naught plus xn is equal to u, is equal to l squared over z. We're taking z to be positive. So not so clear in this in the Euclidean version, but
yeah.
Because we already chose to throw away half of it.
Well, that was Euclidean ADS just is half of the hyperbola, but in this case the answer was supposed to be yes.
Oh.
So those coordinates actually, although you've gone through some complicated manipulations, those are still any point on that upper sheet gets mapped to some point in the y-z coordinate.
I have a slightly unrelated question, but is there a way to see that SO1N is the full isometric group of this space, that there is nothing else which is like some
Well, there are some for this one, You see, I think he would have to have both the upper and lower part, in which case you can have a reflective symmetry.
Okay, but if we just look at the things which preserve the upper half plane, which are connected to the identity, so the Lie, the kind of the, let's say the Lie algebra of the isometric group,
right.
Then it's so one end.
It's not so easy to see, but I would say that yes, it is the full group of isometries for pure ABS.
Well, the group S, so A comma B is just the thing that is defined to preserve this product, so it should be by
right.
Yeah, but the question is, why is there nothing which acts on the ADS subspace of the Minkowski thing, which is highly nonlinear, which doesn't extend to something linear in the R1n, right? Because so we've shown that if it acts linearly on the ADS, then it has to be SO1n because you can extend it to the full space. But what if you can't extend it to something something linear?
I don't know what you mean by linear and non-linear.
Well, but by linear, I mean that, so you have some transformation which acts on this sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And by linear, I mean that if you extend it to the full space by saying that it acts, so every point in the upper half plane can be sent to one point on the sheet by multiplying it by some scalar. Right, so each, in other words, every ray in the space intersects the sheet at one point. So by these rays, you can extend the transformation to the whole space. It's just a mathematical question. Maybe we are wasting time. You can.
I'm just not sure what you mean. I'm sorry. Yeah, maybe if there's time left.
Yeah, sorry.
Just so I understand the question, is the question, are there isometries of that sheet that aren't isometries of the full Minkowski space?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, okay. I mean, other than diffeomorphisms, sort of like, I think the, well, I'm not sure if you count that as a, well, that's not really.
Is there some kind of theorem that n-dimensional space can't have more than n times n plus 1 over 2 Killing vectors or something like that?
I think it's really not about the property of that space, it's about its embedding, right? You have to view it as embedded in this higher dimensional space.
So, this does cover the whole space. So to get an ADS space with the time direction, we have to embed it into Euclidean space, but with two time directions. So it has this constraint equation. Okay, so this can be seen as the square of a vector being equal to minus L squared, but where X is in I think I'll just do that and that. Okay, so so you'll still get a hyperboloid in this Minkowski spacetime with two times, but it will now be invariant under the group SO 2 comma n. So that's the group of isometries for Lorentzian ADS. I should say something. Not yet. No, I can say something. So we have two time directions, x naught and xn. That's kind of a problem because it allows you to have closed time-like loops. And so x naught and xn are our two time directions.
Xn
plus 1.
Xn plus 1.
Thank you. And here are our xi, the space directions. This is so this is the locus of that equation. Now, the thing is, you can get closed time-like loops in these two directions. So that's not a good thing because you want, well, you want to have a space-time that we can work with. So what you do is you basically unroll this circle. So you take the circle and you make it and you break it up so that you have only one time direction. And I'm not sure how I would draw that, but that's how it would go. So that, yeah, so in order to have a space time, you have to break up this this circle and extend it to infinity, from minus infinity to infinity, rather than have it be periodic. Okay. So there are other, we can choose coordinates that satisfy that equation, and I'll choose them to be following. Okay, so if you plug this back in, it will satisfy that equation. Then, but you can plug these into the metric. And after simplifying, you'll find that it's equal to okay, so these are our global coordinates. In the sense that they fill the entire ADS spacetime. And this direction tau is, well, it goes around these time-like loops. So that's why you have to break up these time-like circles and extend tau to, from minus infinity to infinity, so that you have a space-time that stretches from minus infinity to infinity. So this is the global patch, but there is a different patch that's very similar to the upper half plane coordinates that I just wrote down. Okay, so, well, over there we had the certain choice for our coordinates, and here we have a different choice, namely, Okay, so this is a Poincaré patch. And it looks basically the same as for the upper half plane. In this case, the coordinates won't cover the whole ADS spacetime because if you just look, because we will choose Z to be larger or equal to zero. So if you just look at this, okay, now X1 is not the time component. This is just the normal space component that we chose to combine with the time component. So we have a ADS space looking like this. But we're constraining X0 plus X1 to be larger than zero. So we're effectively choosing, we're choosing this part, the part that lies on this part of the hyperbola, cutting away the lower part. So substituting these coordinates into the constraint equation, we can solve for V again. And then we can plug it into the metric where the metric is equal to So one of the time components is included in U and V, and one of the time components is included in the remaining X mu's. And
is U still defined as before?
You didn't put U or
U. U. I didn't. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's. Yeah. I should not have done that. Thanks. Okay. Okay, and substituting in for everything and simplifying. You end up with the metric of ADS CFT. Well, shouldn't make such a strong claim because there are many metrics in ADS CFT. But this is the metric that's due to the D3 brain throat. It's a supergravity solution that is dual to the D3 brain throat. Okay. So, again, we have set larger than zero, and Okay, so I've said that, and it's also, I haven't said this yet, but this is the simplest, the Poincaré patch. It doesn't cover the whole ADS space. Maybe I should say some things about ADS space. So it is the simplest space-time with negative curvature that is a solution to the Einstein equations. And well, you can easily, and it also, the Einstein equations, if you have a negative cosmological constant. So this matrix for this space, for the Poincaré patch, has the Riemann tensor. Ricci tensor, if you contract this, you see that you get, I did say that this is dual to D3 brains, but only if this is a five-dimensional space-time, not for any n. but yeah, in general, the Poincaré patch will satisfy this condition. You contract this with a matrix, then you get that the Ricci tensor is and that the Ricci scalar is equal to I did not say what P is, so okay, so P in this case is equal to the number of dimensions of your ADS space minus one. So in this case it will be N. N plus 1 times N.
Sorry, a question?
Yes.
So, I mean, the Riemann you wrote, I mean, looks exactly the same as the Riemann, the general Riemann in two dimensions. Is there some connection? Is it just because this is maximally symmetric, or is there some deeper
reason? Yeah. Well,
reason?
That's
or no
the reason. Well, for a maximally symmetric spacetime, you've got that whole bunch of other stuff is zero, and that this is what you're left with. So I guess you could say this is the simplest tensor that have the anti-commutative relations of the Riemann tensor. In two dimensions, can you not have non-homogeneous space-time?
It's related to the fact that every metric in two dimensions is conformal to a maximally symmetric space.
Oh.
And the thing in front is like a conformal factor which you can.
Okay, and you can we can find from the Einstein equation.
Richer scalar.
That substituting in for these guys and cancelling the G's, you get that lambda is equal to how I have to replace So you can relate your the ADS radius to the to the cosmological constant by this formula. Again, the space-time is n plus one dimensional. Okay. Now I can draw the Penrose diagram for these, for the Poincaré patch. So, if you draw the space-time as a cylinder, this would be global ADS with time running up. Okay, then the Poincaré patch would be something that looks like this. Okay, so should tell you what everything here means. Yeah. So my time direction is one of the y's that's inside the metric, and you basically get that constant. Okay, so time runs like, so constant positions will run like this. And so these are constant coordinates, not constant time. And this is so the yellow lines are lines of or surfaces of constant position, and the orange lines are lines of constant time. Okay, it's probably a bit obscure here, but all of these things are inside the cylinder, not on the surface. So, furthermore, this yellow plane that got a bit obscured now. Maybe I should use white chalk. That runs along the surface. This defines time minus infinity. And this plane on top defines, well, I used, this is global time, this is coordinate time in the patch. This is time equal to plus infinity. Okay. You can see that all geodesics, let's stop there. So
What's the relation between T and tau?
T and tau. Tau is the global time, so that runs independent. This thing keeps going as finite values on either side of this patch, whereas inside the patch, you have a different coordinate for your time. So it's a you could say it's a coordinate singularity of the patch.
So in your coordinates, T is what dy, T is what, which is it y0 or y, no, y2?
Is what 0? Oh, T is one of the y's,
yeah, okay.
I should say. Yeah, I guess you could call it y0.
Is the tau there the same tau as in the yellow metric on the right?
Did I write the tau? Oh, yes, I did. Yes, it's the same tau.
The way you chose the coordinates, I think it actually has to be yn plus 1, because the one with negative signature.
Okay. So this is a bit obscure. So what you can do is you project everything to the boundary, and then you draw a planar diagram, which looks like this. I'll draw it a bit bigger. Okay, so your lines of constant position run like this. Okay, from, so this is, sorry, am I mixing stuff up? That's T. No, I think it's right. Okay, this is, T equals plus infinity. These are constant positions, constant y, y, I, where I is not equal to n plus 1. Okay, so you can see that this is a null array and this is a null array. So you've got a light null infinity for your spacetime. And well, what that basically means is that you can basically see the entire past of your spacetime. This is actually the same Penrose diagram for Minkowski spacetime. And so what this tells us is that the boundary of your ADS space is Minkowski space. And this is also easy to see just from the metric, because if you do a rescaling of your metric to get rid of the L squared and Z squared in front, then you just have Minkowski spacetime. So as you go to the boundary, you have a conformal boundary that is Minkowski. Okay. right. So, finally, if you're all patient enough, I can write down some ADS and CFT similarities. I won't say a correspondence, but okay, so okay, so last week Todd wrote down for us that the conformal group in D plus one in D dimensions, so if you have a CFT in D spatial dimensions and one time dimension, then it forms the group SO2 comma n plus 1. And I should call my things the same variable. Okay. We saw that ADS space has a group of isometries. As a group of isometries. And when I say ADS, I mean ADS 1, comma, n plus 1. So basically, ADS space has the same group structure as a CFT in one fewer dimensions. And, well, if we imagine that the conformal field theory lives on the boundary, although it doesn't really, you can kind of imagine that it has the same metric as the boundary, then we can do a simple change of coordinates of ADS. Say let's rescale Z. Okay, if we do that, then the matrix simply becomes basically, what we did is just by doing a change of coordinates in the bulk, we got a Weyl transformation, a global Weyl transformation, but so a Weyl transformation of the boundary spacetime. So we have a new metric, eta prime, union. And so if you had a conformal field theory living on the boundary space-time, or living on a space-time that is has the same metric as the conformal boundary of ADS, then it would have to be conformally invariant because we didn't change ADS spaces, space in any way. The metric is diffeomorphism invariant. So doing a change of coordinates doesn't change ADS space. So doing a via rescaling like that shouldn't change your field theory. Right. So coordinates. Generates So,
Anton, I think the argument you probably wanted to make here is that if you rescale Z to AZ prime, and at the same time you rescale X to AX prime, then in fact your ADS space or your metric is invariant. And you see that you're doing just a coordinate transformation in the bulk or in the ADS space. But if you focus your attention on the X coordinates, which you might think of as the gauge theory coordinates from the exercise and the assignment, then what you're doing in the X coordinates is actually a global rescaling of the coordinate. So I think that's how you see the invariance of the space. Maybe it's just a different set of words.
Right. But if you do that, is that? Yeah. Okay.
Isn't that also what you say by saying eta prime is 1 over a squared eta? Is that in the X space using a Weyl transformation?
Well, it is a Weyl transformation, but he's got a different metric there. But if he rescales the X's, he can get rid of that. And so I see that there's an isometry, or there's an apparent symmetry in the geometry, which suggests that perhaps the physics is invariant under this rescaling. It's okay. Why don't we just finish up?
Right. So, there in a paper by Rob and collaborators, there are some nicer examples. So the ADS metric can be written in some other ways with other conformal boundaries. Okay, that's one example where this boundary or the sigma metric is given by so d omega n minus 1 is just a, it's just a solid angle. So this is a sphere. This is just flat spaced. And this is hyperbolic space. So ADS space can be just can be constructed to have different conformal boundaries, but these conformal boundaries as are all related by conformal transformations. So you can have ADS space that's dual to your field theory living on any, well, not any boundary, but boundaries that are conformally flat. There's some other examples as well, like this one. Okay, so this is another example where your space-time has a boundary that for k equals to 1, the boundary is for k equals to minus 1, it's so your ADA space can be constructed to have a lot of different conformal boundaries, and you can then look at the field theory living on the different boundaries, and they would all have to be, well, I would claim that you can do a change of coordinates that of the bulk that takes you from one case to the other, and then basically you get a conformal transformation on the of one of these boundaries to another one. That was my final statement.